I am delighted to welcome the Hungarian Foreign Minister, Peter Szijjártó, for an interview with Auf 1. Szijjártó has been Foreign Minister since 2014 and belongs to the patriotic ruling Fidesz Party in Hungary. He regularly appears in public with open criticism of the EU leadership. In particular, the minister rejects Brussels' imperial behavior towards Hungary. He insists on his country's sovereignty and that Hungary's government makes policies in the interest of the citizens and not in the interest of Brussels' policies. Welcome, Minister.
Thank you so much. Vielen Dank.
Minister, in this year's elections, the Austrian Patriotic Freedom Party, the FPÖ, became the strongest political force. Last June, you said that if the FPÖ were to govern in the future, it would be a new dimension for patriotic forces, especially regarding the assertiveness in the EU. But what we in Austria are currently seeing with dismay is the plan for a construction of a coalition of losers. Do you see this as the new form of democracy?
Look, first of all, we were so happy with this fantastic performance by FPÖ on the general elections here in Austria, because FPÖ is our ally. We have formed the group of patriots together in the European Parliament, and we really respect the approach and positions of FPÖ when it comes to major political issues, be them global or regional or European. On many issues, we share the same position. And, you know, for me, it's so strange that when a party wins an election, the leader of that party is not being given the chance officially to form a government. And, of course, I don't want to interfere into Austrian domestic issues because I'm fed up with all those who interfere into the Hungarian ones. I just would like to reiterate that we Hungarians are usually under very heavy criticism from the perspective of rule and law and democracy. And if I remember correctly, your president has formulated some criticism against Hungary in the last years as well. So maybe after this case, after not giving the official chance for the leader of the winning party to form a coalition, this kind of criticism from the Austrian political elite should be turned down a bit against Hungary. So we cross fingers for our allies in FPÖ. Congratulations for the outcome of the Vorarlberg. Regional elections, we understand the FPÖ has doubled its support, which is a very clear signal from the side of the people.
In this planned coalition of losers, probably the Socialist Party, the SPÖ, will appoint the vice minister, the vice chancellor. And exactly this party was calling for a lawsuit against Hungary, against your country, because allegedly you are not accepting asylum applications. The number of asylum applications in your country is negligible compared to those of Austria. And Austrian politicians claim that all the Hungary sends all the migrants over to Austria, which your government clearly said, no, that's not the case. But so where do they come from?
So if you ask me, which is the issue on which we have the most fierce debate between the socialists and us patriots is exactly the illegal migration. We Hungarians have a very clear position. Migration must not be managed. Migration must be stopped. And we want international law to be applied. What does international law say? International law says that in case someone is being forced to leave his or her home, then he or she is entitled to stay on the territory of the first safe country. But international law doesn't speak about second, third, fourth, or tenth safe country. First safe country. Therefore, violation of a border between two peaceful countries has nothing to do with human rights. This is a very simple crime, which has to be addressed as it is. So therefore, those who want to enter Hungary in an aggressive way at our border, either with Serbia or Croatia or Romania, they, by definition, they cannot be considered as refugees in Hungary because there's no war going on neither in Croatia nor in Serbia nor in Romania. All our southern neighbors are safe countries. So why would we accept anyone to refer to human rights, to refer to a possible status of refugee coming to Hungary? I mean, come on. So we have to protect our borders. We see that the Schengen system is now being shaken. Why? Because the general principle is under challenge. What is the general principle? Protect each other at the external border, so internal borders, you don't need to implement any kind of checking activities, right? So, but how you protect your external border if you are under financial sanctions for this? So therefore, I think that here anti-migration parties like FPÖ, like Fidesz and others in the Patriotic Group must be very vocal on that. Protect the external border and make it clear that the only way to come in is the legal way and no illegal migrants are allowed to enter the territory of the European Union.
Do you see Greece as a safe country? Because there was a case recently.
Of course. Why not? I mean, why not? This is ridiculous considering an EU member state not a safe place. So, I mean, come on. Greece is a safe place. North Macedonia is a safe place. Serbia is a safe place. Turkey is a safe place. So those who want to enter Hungary, they pass through at least 4 or 5 safe countries. Totally against international law, totally.
But there are court rules saying one, I think it was a Syrian refugee who was who couldn't be brought back to Greece.
Because this is a political decision and not a professional one.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Let us stay with the topic of asylum. A few years ago, you described the EU border protection and agency Frontex as a travel agency. What do you think is in generally going wrong with the EU asylum policy and what would Hungary change?
I think that the major problem is at the basic principle, because the basic principle should be to stop illegal migration while European Union, Brussels, some big Western member states, socialists, they always want to manage migration instead of stopping it. And once you want to manage migration, you are in a trap and you cannot get out of it. So therefore, the major issue should be to change that basic principle, to stop illegal migration and make it very clear that it doesn't make sense to hit the road towards Europe because if you are an illegal migrant, you will not be allowed to come in. As long as the perception is that anyhow you need to come into the European Union and once you come in, you are going to stay. As long as this perception is out there, there will be thousands, tens and hundreds of thousands coming, taking their life at risk, paying tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of euros to the smuggling networks. So what is happening? That Brussels is feeding the smugglers network and is encouraging many, many people from Africa, from Asia, to put their life at risk. And that's a big problem.
Do you think there will be a change, a medium-term change?
If more and more patriotic parties win elections in EU member states, then yes.
Okay. Your Prime Minister Viktor Orban made a remarkable peace initiative, which took him in a very short time to Ukraine, Russia, China, and he also met the presidential candidate Donald Trump. The EU dismissed this as a solo effort of Mr. Orban and even threatened to boycott his EU presidency. People ask him themselves, but how was Orban met by his conversation partners over there? Because I think they were not, Orban didn't just fly in and say, I'm here now. This must have been long preparations.
Yeah, of course. And you know, we have been carrying out a pragmatic foreign political strategy based on common sense. Therefore, we can talk to all sides. We can talk to all sides and we try to utilize on that. The problem is that there is a pro-war majority now in the European leadership, a pro-war majority. If you look outside of Europe, then you see that the global majority is for peace, and we are proud parts. We are proud stakeholders of this global majority. But in Europe, we are still in minority. And you know, if you look at the current situation in Ukraine, you see that the situation is worsening. You see intensified efforts by Russia on the battlefield, more and more people dying there. Harsh winter is approaching. Sanctions are not working out. So I think that the right consequence to be drawn would be to stop the strategy, to be implemented, which you have been implementing up to now. Because this is an unsuccessful strategy. The war has been going on for 1,000 days now, almost 1,000 days. And the European strategy is simply not working out, because the more weapons are being delivered, the longer the war will take and more people will die, instead of, you know, stopping the war, instead of reaching a peace deal. So I think it would make sense to try another strategy, which doesn't aim at weapon deliveries, but aims at diplomatic solution, which doesn't aim at isolating, the two warring parties, but to try to, you know, encourage them to sit around the same negotiating table. Because I think the only way to save lives of the people is bringing peace to the region. So weapon deliveries don't help.
That brings me to my next question. It seems that the EU wants, by all means, to continue this war. And even so, it's harming itself. Sanctions doesn't work. And it harms the EU citizens. So what is behind that idea of this war must go on?
Look, I think that the European leaders in Brussels have made a tremendous mistake at the very beginning, because instead of isolating the conflict, they decided to globalize the conflict. And many of them openly consider this war as if it was the war of theirs. We don't consider it as an our war or it's a war of Europe. We consider it as a war between Ukraine and Russia, two neighboring countries, but definitely not the war of ourselves. But unlike us, many Western leaders have created a perception as if this was the war of theirs as well. And now they just cannot get out of this, circle. If they admit that this has been a bad strategy, then they would have to bear the consequences. And there should be political consequences for sure. Those who have imposed decisions on the European Union, which then ended up in harmful impacts on the European people in the form of inflation, increasing energy prices, and so on and so forth, those have to bear the responsibility. And I don't think that they want to do that. That's why now, you know, they have this saying from any kind of team sports that the best defense is attack. So, you know, they try to move forward. But with that, they just cause more and more harms to the Europeans, unfortunately.
Do you think that the current U.S. Government is playing a role in this?
Look, the current U.S. administration has been playing a role for sure, because they have been fueling this conflict by a lot of weapon deliveries, with statements, with political approach, obviously. Therefore, I would think that a change in the administration, I mean, if President Trump wins, because there will be a change for sure since the current incumbent president is not running anymore. But so if President Trump can win the elections in November soon, then this can be a whole game changer. And if President Trump comes, then I think we have a great hope for peace, only based on experience.
Yeah. Ukraine is receiving billions of euros in aid from the EU. And in return for that, Zelensky has a thank you. Wants to stop oil deliveries transiting to Hungary, Lukoil. And Brussels remains very relaxed with this Ukrainian decision, though the energy safety of two countries, Hungary and Slovakia, is at stake. So do you think this is a kind of setup between Brussels and Kiev to bring you into line?
You know, I'm not quite sure whether this was not the initiative of Brussels.
Oh.
Because In case of a candidate country making a decision which puts a risk on the safety of energy supplies of two EU member states, the Commission, the EU Commission, Brussels, should be strong enough to stand up and say to this candidate country, look, don't do that, because it's harmful to two member states, or at least speak about it, you know. But the European Commission has done nothing. You know, both of us, Slovaks and Hungarians, we have turned to the European Commission, telling them that this is a risky decision to us because our energy safety of energy supply is at risk. And they have said, no, it's not a problem, as they have said. You know, and this is really outrageous. This is really outrageous. Okay, afterwards, our national oil company was able to come to an agreement with the Russian and the Ukrainian counterparts. They could modify the contract with the Ukrainians in a way that we could overcome this problem. But I mean, still, my problem is that the European Commission has not done anything. And you know, for us, the energy supply is a major issue because we are a landlocked country. So we are basically based on the cooperation with the neighboring countries. And as we are, you know, for example, as we are ensuring the transit of electricity to Ukraine, you know, we expect them not to disturb the transit of oil to Hungary. Now it's resolved, but European Commission has not done anything. It was totally up to us to resolve this issue.
Let's turn to the topic of democracy and freedom of expression. The EU is becoming increasingly a censorship union. A very active role is played by the EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in this field. And also the European media cartel becomes more and more obvious. It is very clear there is only one published opinion. Independent media such as our TV station, Auf 1, are being attacked, damaged, ruined, or defamed. And this goes as far as bank accounts are cancelled. In our case, it happened. How do you see the future of the media in the EU? Will the pressure increase?
You know, the problem is that when we speak about freedom of media, we have different definitions. Because for us, what freedom of media as an expression should mean is the following, that all media outlets can represent what they want. They can say, they can write, they can circulate whatever they want, of course, within a regulatory framework. But when I say what they want, I mean they can express an opinion on whatever political approach they have. This is maybe more precise this way. But this is not the case in Brussels. In Brussels, the definition of media freedom is the following. If in a country less than 99% of media represents liberal approach, then this is not freedom of media. So in case of Hungary, for example, a part of the media, like I would say half of the media, represents like conservative, national, patriotic approach, let's put it this way. Half of media is very hostile to the government, extremely liberal, mostly financed from abroad, by the way. This is what I call freedom of media, because here, if you want to express a conservative voice, you do it. If you want to express a liberal voice, you do that. If you want to, if you say that the government is sympathetic to you, you say that. If you say that the government should be thrown out, you say that. This is what media freedom means to me. But in Europe, this is not the case. It is not the case. All conservative media are under attack. Patriotic media are under attack. If you are not ready to say the liberal mainstream, you're going to be stigmatized. You're going to be attacked. You're going to be accused. You're going to be stigmatized as, you know, far right, extreme right, whatever. And that's why I think that the support towards real freedom of media should be given. So if you want to represent a conservative approach here in Austria, why you are not allowed to do so?
But it seems that the pressure will grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no question. The liberal mainstream wants to rule everything here in Europe, and especially when it comes to media. You know, we saw all these actions against conservative media outlets.
So thank you, Minister, for this very interesting talk and for taking your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, und vielen Dank für die Möglichkeit.